Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. But first, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sarah, and Dorit Bat Sarah, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Seb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Haramir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. And I want to mention that the heroic Hilltop Youth that you know that our movement is devoted to supporting were involved in some incidents of self-defense, of trying to defend the Jews in Judea and Samaria. Now, I don't know, in the particular incidents I'm going to be referring to, I don't know exactly who was involved, but we're just going to tell you what we know from media reports and from what seems to have happened in the area. Part of the Arab-Muslim-Nazi campaign of terrorism directed against the Jews is stone throwing. Now, we know that they bomb restaurants and schools and bus stations and have slaughtered thousands of innocent Jewish men, women, and children, the Arab terrorists, the Arab Muslim terrorists. They have slaughtered thousands of innocent Jews with vicious acts of terrorism, just as they committed a vicious act of terrorism against the United States on 9/11, murdering 3,000 Americans. They do this all over the world. But in Israel especially, they are devoted to murdering as many Jewish men, women, and children as they can. One of the means they do it is bombings, and another thing they do is shooting people, another is running people over with cars and trucks on the roads. Anything they can do to murder Jews, stabbing Jews, they stab all the time, they're stabbing people. But another tactic they use frequently is throwing big rocks on people, which of course throwing big rock on someone's head, God forbid, can kill them. And so they frequently throw rocks at Israeli Jews. And the Israeli army that we're told is the big, brave Israeli army, the Israel Defense Forces, Tzahal, they are ordered to run away when Arabs throw rocks at them. When Arabs throw rocks and stones, big, giant stones, at Israeli soldiers run away. Run away! This is what the Israeli army has come to. By the way, the U.S. Army, which is very politically correct, disgracefully so, and the European armies, also very politically correct, but they would never, never allow anybody to throw giant rocks at their soldiers and just run away. That they would never do. But the Israeli army, they run into their jeeps, and they run, and they flee, and they run away from the Arabs throwing stones at them, and the Arab Muslim Nazis chase the soldiers away, and chase police away, and stone anybody who comes by. Well, there was a convoy of Jews from the Hilltop Youth who were going on peacefully, traveling on the road, and all of a sudden, Arab Muslim Nazis decided to take out huge rocks and boulders and start throwing it at these Jews to try to murder them, to try to commit murder, which is something the Arabs do all the time in Israel. But this time they started with the wrong group. The Hilltop Youth defended themselves. There's no question. Nobody denies that it was the Arab Muslim Nazis who started the stone throwing, who did the provocation, who came and attacked them. The Jews were trying to defend themselves. And so the Jews threw rocks and stones back at them to defend themselves, because they're not armed. The Jews are not allowed to be armed. They strip the Jews of weapons, even though the Israeli army and the Israeli police and the Israeli government have given weapons to Arab terrorists, to the PLO terrorists. They have armed and trained them. And PLO terrorists, who call themselves PLO police, have murdered many, many Jews with those weapons. But Jews are not allowed to defend themselves, are not allowed to arm themselves, even though they're facing constant terrorism, constant mass murder, constant attempts to murder them and their women and their children and their babies. Every day the Arabs in their media vow to murder all the Jews and push the Jews into the sea and finish Hitler's job. This is something they speak about all the time in Arab media. This time they started with this group of Hilltop Youth. the Hilltop youth are not like the Israeli soldiers that we read about that are supposed to be so brave and so... No, they're not like the Israeli soldiers with their hands tied behind their backs. The Hilltop youth defended themselves. And all they did is throw the rocks back. And went and chased after the Arab stone throwers and threw the rocks back. And so there were Arab vehicles whose windows of Arab vehicles were broken. You know, when you throw rocks back, what are you going to do? That's what happens when you start throwing rocks at people. You're liable to get your windows broken in your car if you're going to use your car to throw rocks at people. Or if you're going to use stores to hide in the stores or come out of the store in order to throw rocks, you're liable to get, when people throw rocks back at you, you're liable to get the store windows broken. So store windows were broken and car windows were broken and there was shattered glass all over the Arab town. And all the Jews did was defend themselves. That's all they did. They just showed, we're not afraid of you. We're not going to take this. And the Jews physically defended themselves. They got into physical confrontations with the Arab terrorists that wanted to murder them. The Arab terrorists are used to encountering Israeli soldiers whom they physically attack, and the Arab soldiers and the Jewish soldiers run away. The Jewish soldiers, Jewish police, Jewish border guards run away from them. Now, the Jewish soldiers, Jewish police, and Jewish border guards are very brave when they beat up Jewish women and children on hilltops and throw them out of their homes. Then they're very brave. But when it comes to Arab terrorists who attack them, they're cowards. They act like cowards. And please don't tell me about gate orders and everything else. Look, if somebody physically attacks you, you have a right to defend yourself. Orders, schmorders, okay? You don't have to stand there and be physically attacked by anybody. But that's what they've taught Israeli soldiers, Israeli police, and Israeli border guards to do when Arabs physically attack them. And so, what do we have? We have a situation where the Arabs thought that they could physically attack these Jews, these Hilltop youth, and so they also tried physically attacking them at one point. They tried to physically attack them because the Jewish youth were heavily outnumbered in Judea and Samaria. There are only 400 Hilltop youth against hundreds of thousands of Arab Muslim Jew haters who surround them and in big cities and communities and surround them. And so they thought, you know, this is going to be easy prey. We outnumber them very heavily. We'll have no problem. The only thing is, it didn't turn out that way. A lot of them, the Jewish youth defended themselves, and it was the Arabs who got the beating in the end for daring to physically attack these Jewish youth, who again were acting only in self-defense, only in self-defense, and that is the truth. Now, in a situation like this, who do you think the police and the soldiers and everybody will go after? The Arabs who started stoning them, the Arabs who were screaming death to the Jews, the Arabs who promised to exterminate the Jews, the Arabs who came out deliberately to stop people who were peacefully passing on a highway, which they have every right to use. The Arabs who attacked them and promised to murder them and were throwing rocks at them and physically attacked them, tried to physically assault them. Are they, the police, of course, are going to go after the Arabs in order to protect the Jews who were just acting in self-defense, of course, right? No, not in Israel. In Israel, the Jews who acted in self-defense are the ones that everybody condemns, including the so-called Yesha Council, which is an evil organization of self-hating traitors, of scum. Scum! It's the Jews who were defending themselves who were called hoodlums, and all other types of names for defending themselves. In other words, the Jews of the Hilltop Youth were expected to run like the Yesha Council runs, like the Israeli army runs, like the Israeli police, like everybody else runs away when Arabs attack them. The Hilltop Youth were expected to run away, and by the way, when you run away, your life is in danger because you never know. While you're running, they could throw a rock on the back of your head and kill you, God forbid. And they stone people while they're running away, so your life is in grave danger if you turn your back and run. I mean, this was a matter of life and death. They were just trying to defend themselves. And the Jews who were defending themselves are the ones who are being condemned, and the ones who they say, you're hoodlums, how can you do this? What did you do? What are you talking about? How did you do something like this? Now, it's true that The same Arab towns and villages and that produce terrorists that have slaughtered innocent Jewish babies, Jewish women have been murdered and raped by them. And they murder and rape their own women too, and their own children. They do this all the time in Arab villages. They, when they do that, nobody says anything. That's fine. But they said some of the stores and cars belonging to these Arab terrorist Nazi murderers, some of their windows were broken during this exchange of rock throwing. Oh, that's unacceptable. What a joke we have in Israel today. But you JTFers can be proud of JTF. We stand behind the Jews who defended themselves. We stand behind the Jews who are not going to run away when someone throws giant rocks at them or their brothers and sisters. We stand behind the Jews who are not going to run away while the Arabs chant death to the Jews and death to Israel and promise to murder all the Jews, which is what they always do. We stand behind the Jews who are doing what the law in any civilized country permits someone to do to defend themselves when they are in danger, in mortal danger. And so we just wanted you to know that the people that JTF supports, the heroic, idealistic Jews that JTF supports, are not only noble Jews, beautiful Jews. And one of these days I want to show you pictures of the animals they save from the Arab hunters who torture, sadistically torture animals and tear them to pieces and laugh and dance around them and have dogs parading, dogs biting and ripping animals to pieces, and the Arabs are laughing and enjoying themselves. And these noble hilltop youth, they rescue animals, they save animals, they're kind, they're noble, they're idealistic, they're beautiful human beings, and they're also very brave. They're real heroes. How could there be anybody out there that doesn't support the hilltop youth? And yet JTF is the only group supporting, sending money to the hilltop youth, the only organization outside of Israel that actually funds the hilltop youth. How is that possible? But that's the reality. That's the sad reality we live with. But you know what? Hashem, God, was watching. May God protect the hilltop youth, because their fight is our fight. And if you want to help the hilltop youth, there are two ways you can do it. You can help them online by going to hayamim.org, our Hebrew main page. On top, you'll see a donate button. You click on the donate button, and in a couple of minutes, it's very easy. You can make a donation. You can make a one-time donation, or you can make recurring donations every month. You can send a certain amount every month to help these noble heroes. You know, there's a big storm coming up in Israel now. As we speak, there's a giant snowstorm coming up, and they live in wooden shacks with their babies, with their wives, and it's freezing. And they're doing this because if they weren't there, we would lose all of this land. And all of the Jewish people in Israel would be in danger. How can we not support them? So you go to hayamin.org, click on the donate button, do it as soon as this program is over, and make a donation to these great Jews. That's one way to do it. That's online. If you want to do it through the regular mail, you can do it through the regular mail by sending checks or money orders to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Again, you make the check or money order out to JTF and you send it to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. I'm so proud. I'm so proud to be supporting these great Jews. All of us should be proud. We should be ashamed of the people who are not supporting them. And now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers this week, which is something I look forward to. By the way, you know, I have problems with my teeth this week. I have a tooth over here that's hurting and a tooth over here that's hurting, and I got to get root canal. But because of my toothache, I had a fever. The toothache caused the fever. And you know, when you have a fever now, everybody's afraid maybe you have corona. I don't have corona. It's because of the toothache. But I had fever, so I don't even feel that well the past couple of days. But you know something, when I speak to my fellow JTFers, the great JTFers, and answer your questions, it makes me feel great again. It lifts my spirits, it makes me feel great again. I love speaking to our great JTFers. Okay, let's start off with The great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, I found out the name King is from an Irish ancestor of MLK, so he'd be part Irish." MLK Sr. changed his name and his son's name to Martin Luther after witnessing Nazism while on a pilgrimage to Germany. He also visited Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Read the bolded part of the below quote from Wikipedia. He invoked the protest of Martin Luther King with his opposition to Nazism. If he was sincere, he didn't know the real history. Binyamin, of course we know this is baloney. Okay, this is what's written in Wikipedia. You can't get more politically correct and dishonest than Wikipedia. Complete lies, okay? He knowingly embraced Martin Luther and took the name. His name was Martin King. He took the name Martin Luther, the name of a Nazi Jew-killing beast in Germany, and took that name. And he visited, by the way, he visited Germany. Nazi Germany he visited. Nazi Germany. And he didn't care at all about what they're doing to the Jews. That didn't bother him at all. What concerned him was he decided he liked the name of Martin Luther and wanted to adopt that name, knowing full well the history of what Martin Luther and the Lutherans did to the Jews over the years. And Binyamin now writes, and I go, so Martin Luther King has never been a friend of the Jewish people, ever. And Binyamin now writes, and I quote, "Two, did you know before reading this that Alberta King, the mother of MLK Jr., was assassinated by black Hebrew who originally planned on assassinating Jesse Jackson? The black Hebrew responsible hated Christians, which is why he did it." By the way, MLK's brother died in a pool the year after his assassination. Discuss the feud between MLK's church and the black Hebrews. Yeah, I've discussed the fact that, if you recall, I'm the one who brought up the fact on a prior program that Martin Luther King's mother was murdered by a crazy black person. And black Hebrews are nuts. They're crazy. They're completely crazy. As I mentioned before, I remember they got a show. I was on at 10 o'clock at night on cable TV in New York on the public access station, and we had a big audience. And they got a show 10:30. They wanted to get a show right after me to start cursing me and, the black Hebrews. And they got on and they started screaming and yelling, "Nigga, you know nothing. You be down in black people, nigga. You know nothing, nigga. You better, nigga, nigga." They kept calling me nigger. So I went on the show because, as you know, I'm a civil rights leader. I went on the next week and I said, and I showed a clip of them calling me nigger, repeatedly calling me nigger. And I said, "Why do you keep calling me nigger? I'm not a nigger. I'm not black." Anyway, whatever. But the black Hebrews are insane, and black people murder each other all the time. This is part of their wonderful culture, the great culture that we're talking about. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And if anybody wants to read the quotes that Binyamin brought from Wikipedia, they can go to our forum and go to our question thread here, where he has some interesting quotes here. And I do advise people to read it if you have time. And now we go to Yamashmo to Islam, another good friend of ours, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on the sex offender pedophile Philip Garrido of Antioch, California?" You know something? I don't know anything about him. Yamashmo to Islam, I plead guilty. You got me. I don't know anything about him. You know, I've been so busy this week, I didn't even have a chance to look at these questions before we did the show, and I know nothing about Philip Garrido of California. If he's a convicted sex offender and a pedophile, I think that there is nothing more grotesque than to victimize innocent little children. And that's the worst thing you can do. I think that pedophiles and sex offenders should receive at least a life sentence, life without parole, if not worse. And if they're really cruel, if they commit acts of violence or rape children or do other things, I think they should be executed. But I think they should be sentenced to life without parole so that society and the children will be safe from them. That's just a general statement, in my general opinion. Thank you, Mahmoud Islam. And again, I apologize for not knowing about this specific guy, but if he is a sex offender and pedophile, that's my opinion of him and what he deserves. And now we go to the great Naches, who is one of our great JTFers going way back. Naches is someone that I know for many, many years. We go way back. He's really one of our great people. Nachas writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, one, while the ideal and noble commandment is for all Jewish people to be religious Torah Jews and to live in the land of Israel, do you think that chilonim means non-religious Jews, that live in the land of Israel have any more schut means merit, than religious Jews in the galut being the exile? In other words, interesting question. In other words, Nachas is asking, who has more merit, who has more schut? A non-religious Jew who lives in the land of Israel, which is fulfilling a great commandment, and is part of our necessary destiny as the Jewish people, but he's not observing other commandments, but he lives in the land of Israel at least, or a Jew who calls himself religious but lives in the galut. He observes kashrut and shabbat and chagim, and he davens three times a day and so on and so forth, but he lives in the galut, which is a terrible sin. Who is worse? Who is better? Well, of course, the ideal situation, as you mentioned, Nachas, is for a religious Torah Jew to live in the land of Israel. That's what we really aim for. That's the ideal situation. I can't really make a generalized statement as to who is worse, because every case depends upon all types of different factors. There are non-religious Jews that do certain things, other things in life. I can't make a generalized statement. I can't, and I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough in Torah or worthy of making a generalized statement when it comes to this. But needless to say, I certainly agree with you that that people who call themselves religious but insist upon living in the galut outside of Israel are doing something which makes no sense at all if they really want to be viewed as religious by Hashem and by all standards. We have to live in Eretz Yisrael. We have to live in the land of Israel. Nachas now writes, and I quote, two, you recently mentioned Hillel Cook. Could you discuss him more in depth? Yair Stern and Chafetz Chaim. Thank you. Okay, these are three people that, three important historic figures that Nachas wants me to speak about. Hillel Cook was certainly an important figure. His English name was Peter Bergson. He worked with the Hollywood playwright Ben Hecht. And they saved hundreds of thousands of Jewish lives during the Holocaust. They had the only organization that was raising money and creating awareness and putting full page ads in newspapers. At that time, newspapers were the big thing, because this is before the era of television. This is before television, certainly before the internet, and newspapers were the big thing. So they had full page ads in newspapers. And they put on a giant performance in Madison Square Garden, which the First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, Yimach Shema, attended, and which over 300 members of Congress attended. Over 300 senators and congressmen attended this event in Madison Square Garden that was intended to commemorate the murder of 2 million Jews. This was in 1942, when 2 million Jews had already been murdered, and they wanted to stop any further murder, and they tried to arouse awareness, and in the end they succeeded in pressuring the Jew hater Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, to indeed support rescue missions like the Raoul Wallenberg rescue mission, and they were responsible for saving hundreds of thousands of Jews who would have been murdered just like the 6 million Jews were murdered, if not for their efforts. So that was very noble. In addition to that, Hillel Cook, again, that's his Hebrew name, Hillel Cook, his English name, Peter Bergson, and the Hollywood playwright Ben Hecht, they also raised money for Hayirgun HaTzvayi HaLeumi, Etzel. Etzel is the acronym for the big Jewish underground freedom-fighting organization. They raised money for them to liberate the land of Israel from the British. That was also very important, what they did. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. And the Jewish establishment fought him day and night. The Jewish establishment would meet with Roosevelt, not to beg Roosevelt to bomb the rail lines in order to stop the Holocaust, not to beg Roosevelt to do things that would have saved millions of Jews, not to try to pressure Roosevelt to save millions of our brothers and sisters who were being burned and gassed in the worst crime ever committed in human history. No. Instead, when they were meeting with Roosevelt, they were meeting with Roosevelt to plot together with him how to frustrate any rescue efforts I mean, this is these Jewish establishment traitors, these serpents in the Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Congress, B'nai B'rith, the American Jewish Committee, Hadassah, the Zionist Organization of America. These are criminals. 6 million Jews were murdered. The blood of 6 million Jews is on their hands. They would meet with Roosevelt and ask him to either draft Peter Bergson or to deport him from the United States, because he was not an American citizen, to deport him or draft him or do something to get him out of commission so that he wouldn't be embarrassing them anymore by bringing up how the Jews are being murdered in Europe during the Holocaust. This is what the Jewish establishment, these are the Jewish leaders, the people like AIPAC, that sick, demented Jews continue to support, okay, who are all traitors. AIPAC is an organization of traitors, the worst traitors. And any Jew with a yarmulke who supports those traitors should be ashamed of themselves. You're not doing good. You're hurting Israel and hurting your own people. AIPAC is an organization that lobbies for a so-called independent Palestinian state. It's an organization that lobbies for foreign aid to Arab Nazi countries and foreign aid that hurts Israel and that makes Israel dependent on the United States. It's an evil organization, a terrible organization, and AIPAC is an umbrella group for all the Jewish establishment organizations that murdered 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. Not only did they do nothing to rescue the Jews, they did everything to sabotage the efforts of Peter Bergson and Ben Hecht to try to save the Jews. Now, in the end, unfortunately, Peter Bergson, I mean, he did noble things, but then later, after a Jewish state was established, he went nuts. He didn't really go nuts. He was always, you know, he believed in establishing a Jewish state, but he believed in other things that were insane. He believed that we have to amend, that we shouldn't have a law of return, that only Jews should return to the land of Israel. If we didn't have the law of return, the Arabs would overwhelm Israel in 24 hours. It'd be the end of the Jewish state. But he wanted to amend the law of return. He defended Israeli-Arab Nazis, just like Vladimir Jabotinsky, like Zev Jabotinsky did. He defended them and said they should be allowed to live in Israel with full rights and so on, despite the fact that they openly said they're committed to destroying the Jews and to committing genocide. So he did a lot of sick things afterwards, and that was true for a lot of members of the underground group, and a lot of their children and grandchildren became very sick people after that, because if you don't have a true Torah-based ideology, you can believe in something good and do good, and then later on do very bad things. That happens all the time in this world. We have free will until the day we die. Somebody could be good and righteous their whole life, and then at the age of 80, they turn evil. That can happen too. Anything is possible, and the opposite is also possible. So anyway, so he was good in the beginning for Israel and during the Holocaust, but afterwards he was terrible. Now, you also ask about Yair Stern. Yair Stern, that was his name was also Avraham Stern. He also went by the name Avraham Stern, and he created something called the Stern Group, or Lehi. Lehi is the acronym for the Hebrew Lochamei Cherut Yisrael, which means fighters for the freedom of Israel, and that was another underground group. He made a deal with Poland, Avraham Stern. He was a great Jewish hero, a great Jewish hero. He made a deal with Poland to bring 40,000 Jewish freedom fighters to Israel in order to throw the British out. Now, in the end, there were only about 1,000 Jews in the underground, about 1,000 Jews in Etzel and Lehi, the two underground groups, and those 1,000 Jews threw 100,000 British soldiers out of Israel. It was amazing what they did. Sometime we really should tell the story. You should read books like Revolt, like The Revolt by Menachem Begin, even though I don't like Menachem Begin, but his book catalogs and shows you the incredible miraculous victories that and blows that were done against the British. Biblical type miracles. But anyway, in the end, 1,000 Jews threw 100,000 British soldiers out of Israel and liberated the land of Israel and redeemed the land again after 2,000 years of the Jews being homeless and stateless. Can you imagine if instead of 1,000 there had been 40,000? He wanted to bring 40,000 there, and this was before the Holocaust. He wanted to bring 40,000 Jews there to throw the British out. And Poland agreed to help arm and train and get the 40,000 Jews together and send them to do this. Why did Poland, a Jew-hating Nazi country like Poland that murdered so many Jews during the Holocaust, why would they agree to something like this? Because they wanted to get rid of Polish Jews. He went to them and said, look, you know, I know you don't want the Jews staying in Poland. If you give us a Jewish state, You'll get rid of all your Jews. They'll all come to Israel. You won't have Jews in Poland anymore. So Poland right away agreed. And they were willing to help. But of course, his plans were sabotaged by his plans. This was in the 1930s, and his plans were sabotaged by the Jewish establishment and by other events. And unfortunately, his plans never came to fruition. In the end, the same Jewish establishment groups that made the Holocaust possible, that are running Israel now in a traitorous way, the same Jewish establishment groups ratted on him. And in 1942, the British came to him. They came to his hideout because he was ratted on by Jewish establishment leaders, and the British murdered him in cold blood in 1942. But he was definitely a Jewish hero, Avraham Stern. And you also write about Hachafetz Chaim, or in America they say Chofetz Chaim, because they don't want to speak Hebrew. They don't want to speak Hebrew the way Hebrew should be spoken. They prefer to continue to speak Yiddish. I'm not against Yiddish, but when we live in Eretz Yisrael, we should be interested in Hebrew now. That's the language of the Jewish people. The Torah was not given to us in Yiddish. Anyway, Hachafetz Chaim was an anti-Zionist Haredi rabbi. What can I say? You know, he was against the movement to create a Jewish state. He warned his students to oppose it. His writings, even though he died in 1933, his writings were used even years later to oppose a Jewish state. So I think, unfortunately, I think he did a lot of harm. I think he did a lot of harm with his position, and he was just plain wrong. Because rabbis like him who told the Jews to stay in Europe and not to fight for a Jewish state, the people who listened to them, the vast majority of people listened to them, unfortunately, were murdered in the Nazi death camps. Thank you very much, Nachas. And now we go to Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes, who writes, and I quote, and he's writing here in Hebrew. Okay, Ram, I'm translating it into English. But you know, we want to do this in English as much as possible, because we don't want to lose our audience. We want our audience to stay with us, and most of our audience doesn't speak Hebrew. But I hope people will have the patience as I translate this. It's only going to take a couple of minutes. I'm going to read the Hebrew and I'm going to translate it into English. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Mashlomcha. Hello, dear Chaim, how are you? Mitztaer she'ani roshem be'ivrit ve'lo be'anglit. מה דעתך על עסקת הטיעון שמציעים לנתניהו הרשע, אם כדאי לו לקחת אותה או לא? What is your opinion on the deal that they're offering Netanyahu? Is it, should he take it or not? And he apologizes also, by the way, in the beginning of the question, he apologizes for writing in Hebrew and not in English. Ram, אני לא יודע, אני לא יודע מה נתניהו מתכוון לעשות, ועדיין יכול להיות שיהיה טיעון. אתה יודע, מאז שאתה כתבת את זה, כל זה נפל. הם לא עושים טיעון כזה עכשיו, הם לא עושים עסקה כזאת עכשיו. נחיה ונראה. נתניהו כן מושחת, וללא ספק הוא הפר את כל החוקים של ישראל, אבל מה שהם מאשימים, ההאשמות נגדו, זה כלום ואפס לעומת הדברים האחרים שהוא עשה. What I just said is that Netanyahu, I don't know, you know, the deal that they proposed to Netanyahu. Netanyahu has been indicted on has several indictments pending against him, and he was going to work out a deal, and that just fell through. We don't know if they're going to offer him another deal, if there's still time for another deal, who knows. But I told Ram that he definitely is corrupt and did violate laws, and that, you know, that we know that the laws, that the things they're accusing him of doing that were wrong are nothing compared to the things that he did, which he's not being indicted for, the treason that he committed that he's not being indicted for. He's not being indicted for meeting with Arafat and hugging Arafat and saying Arafat is his good friend, and giving Arafat 97% of Hebron, the city of our forefathers, and giving in the Y agreement 13% of Judean Samaria to Arafat, and all the other terrible things that he did. For that, that's what he should be really being charged with, because that's treason. Anyway, Ram Let's see what else Ram writes. Mekave she biyom rishon hakarov harayayon shelcha im Nir Weinberg yetze lapoal velo yiyu dvarim bilti tzfuyim legabei noar hagevaot leven Zion yeshlo amuta efshar lasot giyus המונים למען נוער הגבעות דרך העמותה של בן ציון מקווה מאוד שאתה מעריך אותי באהבת ישראל רם מאיר אברהם. And Ram writes that he has a friend of his who wants to help the Hilltop youth, and he writes about the fact that this Sunday I'm scheduled to do an interview with Nir Weinberg on Twitter. It's going to be in Hebrew, and that he hopes it goes well. And by the way, Ram is the one who got me the interview. And Ram, אני מודה לך על כל מה שעשית כדי להשיג את הרעיון הזה, ואני מודה לך על כל מה שאתה עושה, ואני כן מעריך אותך. And now let's go to Hirvatsky Noah Hyde, who always asks great questions, and Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, "Can you comment on the following teaching?" Quote, every person was created in the image of God, and cursing or denigrating another person includes a measure of cursing or denigrating the image of God in that person. This lesson follows from the prohibition of blasphemy, don't curse another person. Since all people are created in God's image, cursing anyone is similar to blasphemy, unquote. Hirvatsky, I have a real problem with this politically correct interpretation of the commandment of against blasphemy. Of course, we are commanded never, chas v'chalila, God forbid, to engage in blasphemy, Jews and Gentiles, a very, very serious sin. But my problem is that there are politically correct rabbis who want to be nice and want to be politically correct and want to make Judaism a religion where we love everybody and everybody's wonderful and everybody's just coochie-coo. That's not the world, that's not the real world, and that's not Judaism. Hirvatsky, we have something called the Shmoneh Esre, which means 18. Shmoneh Esre means 18, and it's a prayer that we say three times a day, that religious Jews say three times a day. Four times a day on Shabbat, five times a day on Yom Kippur. Okay, five times on Yom Kippur, four times on Shabbat, and three times every day on a regular weekday. And there was a 19th prayer added to the Shmoneh Esre. And that's a prayer where we curse Jewish traitors. Velamalshenim al tehi tikva is how the prayer starts. And there are various versions of it, but that's one of the versions. That's the most common version, the one that I just gave you. Which means, unto the informers may there be no hope. And we curse informers and traitors and enemies of the Jewish people. And by the way, that curse is entirely directed at Jewish enemies. That's not directed at the Gentile anti-Semites. That's directed at Jewish anti-Semites, at Jewish enemies. And in that prayer, we ask that these informers and traitors who committed so much damage, who created so much damage for the Jewish people and did so much harm to the Jewish people over the years, that these evil, vicious people, that they be uprooted and smashed and destroyed. And it's a curse for this world and the world to come. I mean, it's the ultimate Jewish curse. That prayer. We say that prayer three times a day, and four times. On Shabbat, actually, we don't actually say. I said we say the Shmoneh Esre on Shabbat. That's really not true. We don't say all of the on Shabbat and then Yom Kippur. We don't say all of the prayers, all of the 18 prayers when there's a Jewish holiday or Shabbat. But we do say them all on weekdays. All 18 of the prayers. When I'm speaking, sometimes for me now to explain and go into all the details, we'd be here for another hour. But and a lot of people would walk away confused anyway. But look, suffice to say that on weekdays, in other words, on normal days that are not Shabbat or not the holidays, we do say all 18 prayers, and in fact 19 prayers, and we do curse Jewish enemies. People who, I mean, look at the quote you have here from, I don't know who you're quoting, but look what it says here. All people are created in God's image. Cursing anyone is similar to blasphemy. Cursing anyone? You mean we're supposed to remove that prayer from our prayers every, that the rabbis gave us, that Knesset, that HaKnesset HaGedolah gave us? We're supposed to remove that prayer that the great Jewish sages gave us that are part of Judaism? And are we supposed to remove all of the verses in Sefer Tehillim, in the book of Psalms, where King David, as with prophetic being prophetically inspired, curses his enemies repeatedly and talks about wanting to do the most violent things to them and curses them and asks God to curse them? We're supposed to remove all those verses from the book of Psalms? I mean, it's absurd. We're not allowed to curse people, it says here. We're not allowed to curse another person no matter what? You mean we shouldn't curse Adolf Hitler? We shouldn't curse Joseph Stalin? We shouldn't curse anybody, no matter what. No matter how evil, no matter how monstrous, you can't curse them because they're created in God's image. Precisely because we're created in God's image. When people do the ultimate evil, they deserve to be cursed. Because they had the opportunity. They had the opportunity to be great and to fulfill a great role in the world. And look what they did with it. So this is a politically correct, I don't like this quote at all. It's politically correct and it goes against, and I don't know who says what or what the context of this is, but if it's intended to say that no one can be cursed under any circumstances, I certainly don't agree with that. Either that, or it could be that this is being taken out of context and that this is not the real meaning or intention of the person who wrote this. It's possible the person who wrote this is a very righteous person, but what he's saying is being taken out of context. And that he doesn't literally mean that every single person, no matter how evil, should never be cursed. Because that would go against everything Judaism teaches. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And now we go to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Joe Gutfeld being our good friend, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you discuss the recent episode of the NBC series Law and Order, SUV, which had a scene in which the main character's adopted son came out as bisexual? The boy himself is only about 10 years old. Do you feel that it's disgusting that these liberal networks are exposing young children to sex? Thanks. Unquote. Joe, you know how I feel about this, of course. I mean, this is so evil. You know, if you commit, God forbid, if a person, when I say you, I don't mean you, Joe, God forbid, I mean anybody out there listening, you in general. If you commit a sin between yourself and God, it's very bad. It can bring punishment. Very bad. But you can ask for forgiveness. And you can change your ways, repent, ask for forgiveness, and be truly contrite, and you can be forgiven. But when you commit a sin of causing others to sin, how do you repent for that? You can't repent for somebody else. The damage you've done by convincing others to sin, by convincing others to be evil, that's something you can't even repent for. You can't. This is so evil. All the people in Hollywood and on television and all the other media people, the other vicious people out there who deliberately, intentionally try to brainwash little children, innocent children, and try to convince them to lead a life of perversion, a life of abominations, a life that God detests. God makes it clear in the Bible he detests this type of life. And these people are deliberately going in the face of that and deliberately trying to brainwash little children who don't have the ability to fight back and to, little children don't know enough. They can be easily influenced. And unfortunately, parents today don't give them a proper education. So this is as horrible as it gets. Very, very horrible. And by the way, people like this who deliberately target little children for brainwashing, they're examples of people whom we do curse. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please give your opinion on these former Israeli prime ministers and why you don't like them. David Ben-Gurion, Moshe Sharet, Levi Eshkol. All three of these prime ministers that you mentioned, Chicago Jew, are all, first of all, they're all from the left-wing Labor Party, Miflegat HaAvodah in Hebrew. They're all from the labor movement, the labor party, the left. They're all from the movement that we were talking before about Jewish establishment people who collaborated with our enemies during the Holocaust. They collaborated with the Judenrat. They were the Judenrat and collaborated with Eichmann in Hungary to help Eichmann round up Hungarian Jews and send them to the death camps. That is literally the history of these people. Okay, there's a famous case called the Rudolf Kastner case. He was the head of the Hungarian Judenrat, and he helped Eichmann send hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews to the death camps. And Ben-Gurion and Moshe Sharet and the leaders of Israel that you're referring to here all backed him up when he was on trial. When he sued somebody in Israel, and there was a lawsuit, and they backed him up in the end. David Ben-Gurion, Moshe Sharet, I'll tell you why I don't like them. Because they murdered 16 innocent Jewish Holocaust survivors on the Altalena, a ship that was bringing in weapons to help Israel win the War of Independence in 1948. And they bombed the ship after promising the people on that ship that they were going to fight together with them and they were going to take the weapons and we're all going to fight together to save Israel. And instead they bombed the ship in the harbor in Tel Aviv. Menachem Begin was on that ship. They tried to murder him too. And 16 heroes in Etzel, the Jewish underground group, were murdered in cold blood on that ship. All 16 were Holocaust survivors. Almost all of their families had been wiped out in the Holocaust. They were almost all alone. They lost their whole families. And they came to fight for a Jewish state. And they were murdered in cold blood by their fellow Jews, by these leaders. David Ben-Gurion said, "Blessed be the cannon that fired on the Altalena." He blessed the cannon that sunk the Altalena when they murdered these 16 Jews. And he's the one who gave the order to murder them. And I could give you so many examples of what these guys did. I mean, what they did to the Sephardic Jews, the Sephardic or Mizrahi Jews, Jews that came from Arab and Islamic and third world countries, like my family on my mother's side. They took the children of these Jews. And they promised the parents, because the parents were mostly religious, and the parents said, "We want our children getting a religious education." They said to the parents, "Oh, certainly, of course we're fellow Jews, we're going to give them a religious education." And instead they put them in schools that were violently anti-religious, they used to beat children who wanted to observe Shabbat or eat kosher, and brainwash them. They took 10,000 Jewish babies from their mothers who came from Yemen, Hatemaniot, the Yemenite Jewish mothers. They kidnapped their children. 10,000 Jewish babies were taken. They told the mothers, "Oh, your babies have died. Where's the body? We want to bury the mother, so the parent." "No, no, no. No, no, no. We can't show you the body. It's against hospital procedure." Because the children hadn't died. They kidnapped them. And they ended up handing them over to left-wing couples who raised them to be commies, to be communists. And this really happened in Israel. 10,000 Jewish babies from Yemen were kidnapped by the Israeli establishment. Imagine to kidnap a baby from its mother. And the mother said, "But wait a minute, our baby was perfectly healthy. How could he just suddenly die?" "Well, he died. All of a sudden he got sick and he died," the doctors and the nurses told him. I could give you so many instances of how evil these people are. But I just gave you a few. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to JT Eferis, who is new to the forum, but from Israel. She's from Israel, but she always has very interesting points to make. And she writes, and I quote, "One, Dear Chaim, who are the black Hebrews, Israelites, whatever they call themselves these days? What can you tell us about them in English?" And then in English and in Hebrew, she has articles about them. "These are black Jew haters who claim that all the other Jews are imposters and they're the only real Jews. They try to steal Jewish history because they don't have any of their own. Ignorant, disgusting criminals from the ghettos of the United States who barely know how to read and write and sometimes don't at all know how to read and write, are allowed to stay in Israel illegally all these years 40, 50 years, they're like 50, more than 50 years they're allowed to stay in Israel, in Dimona and in other places, and I'm not allowed to go to Israel. These vicious Jew haters who, by the way, say that all the other Jews should be killed and are going to be killed and are all devils. They're allowed to stay in Israel illegally, but I'm not allowed to set foot in Israel. Now JTFerus writes, and I quote, "Two, it is said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So I'm kind of wondering who is the same person I should bother myself again and again to vote for the right when the result is always the same. If the left is, well, we all know what the left is, scum, to put it mildly, and the right is phony, to put it in simple terms. Why should we even bother to go and vote?" Toda rabba veshabbat shalom, which means thank you very much and have a Shabbat Shalom, a peaceful Shabbat. I agree with your conclusion. I don't see anybody to vote for, because we've been betrayed over and over again by the so-called right, and we know what the left is, and the right, the so-called right, betrays us and does the same thing as the left when they get into power. So what are we gaining so far? We're not gaining anything. When someone does tell us the truth, like Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, when you have somebody who comes along and tells us the truth, he's not allowed to run. And now JTFRS writes, "P.S., could you please upload the interview you mentioned, one on Johnny's program? It's in Hebrew, even better. Thanks, very interesting interview. Ra'iti, toda she'heletem." Thanks, very interesting interview. Okay. Which means, thank you, I saw it, thank you, very interesting interview. She saw my interview in Hebrew, which you can see on our, an interview which we did for an hour and 45 minutes on a program, which we have on our forum. You can see it in the general discussion section. Thank you very much, Ani Modelach JTFRS. And Ve'al Tishkechi Lavo LaTochnit Shel LaTochnit BeTwitter SheAnachnu Naaseh BeYom Rishon. אני מקווה שלא תהיינה שום תקלות, אבל אנחנו נעשה תוכנית בטוויטר ביום ראשון, בתוכנית של ניר ויינברג. Okay, and I just told her to make sure to go to our program. We're having a program on Sunday with Ner Weinberg, that she should also go to that on Twitter. That's also going to be in Hebrew. That's also going to be a Hebrew interview. And now we go to another good friend of ours for many years, Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, "Hi Chaim, thank you for addressing my comment regarding 2 Thessalonians, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Thessalonians. As Christians, we believe that we are judged on Judgment Day, not when we die. We believe when Jesus comes again, then it will be obvious that he's the Messiah, and all righteous people will accept the gospel. So Christians are not saying if you don't believe in the gospel at this moment in time, then you will go to hell. Also, another explanation is that the gospel of Jesus really boils down to 2 principles. 1, love God with all your soul. And 2, love thy neighbor as thyself, which I believe originally comes from the Torah, Leviticus 19:9-18. If you believe in this, guess what? You believe in the gospel of Jesus. Okay, let's deal with this first. You know something? I've read the Christian Bible, and I have never seen any of this justified by Scripture, what you're saying. I don't see any of this in Scripture, that you're not judged when you die, that you're not... I don't see any of this. There's talk about days of judgment, just as there is in Judaism, which they copied from Judaism. But even the day of judgment in Judaism doesn't mean you're not judged when you die. You're judged when you die, and there's going to be a day of judgment after that as well. I don't think there's any question that the scriptures that we pointed out last week make it clear that if you don't believe, not just in the gospel, if you don't believe, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever shall believe, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. Either you believe in that message, it's pretty clear that if you don't believe in that message, you're going to hell. I mean, I don't see how else can you take an honest look. I know you don't want to believe that because you were raised in the Catholic Church, and I understand that as a Catholic, and I understand that it's difficult to to divorce yourself from those things. But I'm telling you, am I absolutely certain that Christianity does say that you have to be a Christian. Not only am I absolutely certain, but the fact is the Catholic Church, which you come from, you know, you come from a Catholic background. The Catholic Church ordered all non-Catholics to be murdered. I mean, so you know, now they're teaching that you can be a non-Christian and not go to hell. You know, now they're teaching that it's possible, not likely, but it's possible. You know, that doesn't square with their history, though, in the Inquisitions and the Crusades. Anyway, Italian Zionist writes, and I quote, "Also, who in their right mind would defend the Crusades? Did you know that the Crusader bastards also murdered tens of thousands of Byzantine Christian, Greek Orthodox Christians? What they did is no more Christian than what the Jews did with the golden calf is Jewish. Did Jesus ever condone killing anyone? Reading about the life of Jesus, how can anyone think he would condone killing Jews or anyone else? We're not talking about Muhammad here. What the popes, crusaders, inquisitors, Hitler, Yamach Shmo, etc. did is so obviously not what Jesus wants. I follow God. I don't follow a pope, especially this one. I can take up the other items you mentioned, but I don't want to hog your time, Chaim. Again, please don't take this in an adversarial way. I just think it's important that the folks don't mistake true Christianity with bogus Christianity." Italian Zionist, from what I read, I think that Christian history and what the Christians have done historically does reflect what it says about the so-called synagogue of Satan, and how the woman says that when Jesus is crucified, that it's going to be on us and our children. We're all going to suffer for this, and you know, I mean, all of this is in the Christian Bible, and you know something, Italian Zionists, the Romans who murdered millions of innocent people, who ran their empire like the Third Reich, who ran their empire like Nazis. The Romans, who used to feed men, women, and children to hungry lions in front of cheering stadiums, tens of thousands of people in stadiums cheering and applauding and getting all excited and happy like at a football game, when hungry lions would tear innocent men, women, and children to pieces in front of them. And Christians who did put, by the way, tens of thousands of Jews on crosses, the most brutal types of murder imaginable. The Romans, there's not one word of condemnation in the Christian Bible against the Romans. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto Rome what is Rome's. You're supposed to give Caesar what he asked for. In this world, you give to Caesar whatever he asks for. In the next world, you give. You worry about giving other things for the next world, that's something else. But you're supposed to obey Caesar. Turn the other cheek was preached to the Jews, not to the Romans. The Jews, that were in a revolt against Rome for their survival, were being told by Jesus and his followers and the apostles to turn the other cheek and to love their enemies. Love their enemies and turn the other cheek means we're supposed to love the Roman mass murderers. And there's not one word of condemnation against Rome in the Christian Bible. But against the Jews, well, it's the most violent type of anti-Semitism you could possibly read anyway. I mean, the worst type of incitement. The Jews are portrayed as the worst people on the face of the earth. And the Romans come out as practically innocent in the whole book. Why do you think that is, Italian Zionist? Could it be because Christianity was written under the Roman sword? Could it be because the Roman Empire wanted to use it to unite the dozens of nations that were part of their empire and tell the dozens of nations, turn the other cheek and love your enemy, meaning love us, the Roman oppressors that are oppressing you. You're supposed to love us. You're supposed to turn the other cheek. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render unto God what is God's. In other words, you obey Caesar. You do what Caesar tells you to do. You don't dare rebel. You're not allowed to rebel against Caesar. But the Jews in the Holy Temple are money changers. All the stereotypical Nazi anti-Semitic things that are written about the Jews. And Jesus goes to denounce all of the Jews, but I never see him preaching and denouncing the Romans, which the Hebrew prophets in the Jewish Bible do. They do that against the enemies of the Jewish people, and many of them pay with their lives. Quite a different situation. Anyway, thank you, Italian Zionist. And Italian Zionist, I know you're a sincere person. And we don't demand that you give up your religious beliefs on this forum. But If you're going to ask us, we're going to tell you honestly what our view is. Because our view is that this thing is, I'm just amazed that 1.5 billion people in the world believe in something like this. It amazes me. It amazes me. Anyway, thank you, Italian Zionist. And now we go to another good friend of ours, Baltimore. Welcome back, Baltimore. We always love to see you here. Baltimore writes, and I quote, "What is your take on the Uyghur situation in China? Thanks." I don't know if I pronounce it right. It's Uyghur or I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it. Those are the Muslims that are being murdered and put in concentration camps in China. Both sides are so evil in this whole story. The Chinese Communist authorities, of course, are brutal, evil people. Mao Zedong and the Chinese Communists murdered tens of millions of people in the Cultural Revolution. Tens of millions of Chinese were starved to death in the experiment for communism in China. Tens of millions died. It was incredible what Mao Zedong did. And we saw, with the coronavirus, we saw the cruelty of China and the lying and deception and the terrible things that, look at the consequences for the world of what they produced. And they're the ones who did produce that. They created the coronavirus in their laboratory because they were doing experiments. They were doing experiments on chemical and biological warfare. And it got out of hand. I'm not saying they deliberately wanted to release it to the world, but it was because of their experimentation that it got out of hand. And then they lied and cheated so that the world was not prepared properly. So China, their leaders, very, very evil. And then you got the Muslims. This Muslim group that, like Muslims everywhere, want to rebel and want to spread Islam everywhere. So I understand the Chinese being worried about this and wanting to stop this. So the Chinese, who condemn Israel, by the way, all the time in the UN, every international forum, always condemning Israel for what Israel does to the Muslims in Israel. And yet they, when they have Muslims in China, look at the hypocrisy. When they have Muslims in China, what do? They put millions of them in concentration camps and murder them and castrate them. So what can I say? Both sides, very, very bad story here. Thank you, Baltimore, but I'm not gonna take up the flag and start defending the rights of Muslims, because I know that if the Muslims, wherever the Muslims take power, wherever they're in power and in control, I know how brutal and cruel and sadistic they are, so I'm not on either side here. Thank you, Baltimore. And now we go to our great friend Kahana Was Right, BT, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim, 1. In Israeli history, why did people who fought heroically on the side of good in Etzel and Lehi become traitorous politicians later in life?" Unquote. Okay, great question. And I sort of tried to respond to this before with other questions that came up. Because these people, like Hillel Cook, when I was answering the question about Hillel Cook, with Nachas asked me about Hillel Cook. These people believed in a Jewish state. They believed that the Jews need an independent country. They were convinced that the Zionist goal of creating an independent Jewish state was necessary. They were convinced of that. But they wanted a Jewish state with Western politically correct values, which of course is an impossibility. A Jewish state like that can't survive. Especially not in the Middle East. So that's why when they were in Etzel and Lehi, they were fighting for a Jewish state, and there was a Holocaust, and so they felt that this is, yes, that they were willing to fight for. But later, when they take power, or when the world pressures Israel, or whatever the reasons are, because of foreign pressure or because of their own confusion about what they really want, later on, they did things that were disastrous and terrible for the Jewish state. So, what can I say? That's Menachem Begin was the commander of Hayargun Hatzvayi HaLeumi. Hayargun Hatzvayi HaLeumi, Etzel, which is the acronym for Etzel. They did very heroic, magnificent things against the British occupiers. And yet in the end, it was Menachem Begin that gave all of Sinai to Egypt, which was one of the most disastrous, catastrophic actions in Israeli history. Israelis still don't understand. They're so, the stupidity. They still don't understand how terrible, what a disaster it was that we lost all of Sinai. If we had had all of Sinai, I mean, how crazy. Just gave the whole thing to Egypt. Anyway, But that's the problem. They believed in certain things that were good and fought for those things, and then later on they believed in other things that were not good. What can I say? Just because someone is righteous on certain issues and believes in and has the right stand on certain issues doesn't mean they're going to do the right thing on other issues later on. That's one thing we certainly learn from Israeli politics and Israeli history. Kano is right, BT now writes, and I quote, "Two, one leader that, as far as I am aware, stayed true to revisionist ideology, Israel Eldad, bemoans in one of his books about how communism had more revolutionary appeal to young Jews in his era than Zionism did. And he says this occurred even after the War of Independence, that young Jews he knew left Israel to go fight for communism. Was this a large-scale phenomenon? How many fell victim to this false idol?" Obviously, there were cases of that, and there were Jews in Israel itself who were communists, and there still are Jews in Israel that are communists. So there's no question that this type of insanity certainly exists. The Jews, after 2,000 years of being persecuted, hated, stateless, and the whole world against them, desperately didn't want the assimilated Jews who wanted to raise a white flag of surrender. They didn't want to be part of this people anymore that everybody hates. They didn't want to identify with that. They wanted to be part of the proletariat, the communist proletariat. We're all workers. Workers of the world, unite. They wanted to end the distinctions between Jews and non-Jews and eliminate all religion and eliminate all nations. And what did John Lennon say? Imagine no more people. And that's what they wanted, because they were horrified by the fact that the Gentile world didn't accept them. And so that was the appeal of communism and these other isms to the Jews. Those Jews who were loyal to their people and who wanted a Jewish state, of course, I mean, there were also Jews like that. There also were, in Europe, there were many Jews who did want a Jewish state. But anyway, there's no question that evil ideologies did have an influence on the Jewish people. That certainly is true. Thank you very much, Kahana was right, for the great questions, as always. And now we go to another good friend of ours, Harel156, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, I wanted to set the record straight. One, I do not support Donald Trump. I would much have preferred Ted Cruz, but given the choices, would you have voted for Hillary? Who did you vote for in 2016-2020? In 2016, I didn't vote because they were both terrible and because Trump promised to pressure Israel, which he eventually did, and promised to come up with a so-called peace plan that would be suicidal, which he eventually did. He promised this when he was running in 2016. So I did not vote in 2016. I'm certainly not going to vote for Hillary. So I did not vote in 2016. In 2020, I voted for Trump, reluctantly. And I regret doing it because he was a terrible president for Israel. Terrible. I wish I had not voted at all in 2020. Harel now writes, and I quote, "Two, in my view, Trump was a stupid president who missed the opportunity to clear and clean the corrupt swamp, namely fire the entire of D.C. workers and put all the criminals in jail. In his time, none of these things happened." Well, not only didn't he do that, he appointed the swamp to all the key positions in his administration. They were all of the key people in his administration. He was the swamp, just as much as any other president. Harel writes, "These swamp peoples have been promoting wars all over the world. Why? If they promote a war, they have a special interest in doing so. I always asked why the U.S. is an enemy of Russia and not a friend." Well, Russia's an enemy of the United States. Russia is an enemy of the United States. Russia's a cruel, conquering, evil country that is an enemy of America. America should be an enemy of Russia if they have any brains, because Russia only does bad things in the world, only bad things. "And I just asked, and you did not answer, if we are better off with our current president, nor did you answer who in your opinion is running the country. I assume you think he's making no decisions whatsoever. How an absurd and pathetic situation." I do think that he makes no decisions. I think that he's senile, and I think he's a moron, Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden is senile and a moron, and I don't think he's making any decisions. Do I think we're better off with our current president? I would rather have a weak president who is doing evil things than a strong president like Trump. And especially for the Jews, Trump was very strong with the Jews. The Jews were willing to follow him right into the sea, right into the Mediterranean Sea. They loved him so much, and they still love him. They adore Trump. And they accepted his so-called peace plan, which is national suicide. If Joe Biden had proposed the same exact peace plan, there's no way the Jews would have accepted it. There's no way. Obama and the others, when they proposed similar plans, they were rejected by the people of Israel. But when Trump proposed it, the people of Israel were happy to accept it, the overwhelming majority, and Netanyahu openly embraced it and accepted it. Trump's so-called peace plan was worse than withdrawing to the pre-1967 borders. Worse than a retreat to the borders before Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim, before the Six-Day War. Worse than that. The things he wanted to do and the land he wanted to take in the Negev, Meshulash, HaNegev HaMeshulash, in Yerushalayim. Horrible plan. Horrible, terrible plan. Create a corridor. A corridor. Retzef territoriali bein Aza v'Yehuda v'Shomron. Create a corridor splitting Israel in half. That was part of the Trump peace plan of Kushner and of Netanyahu. That was part of their plan. Completely insane plan. Completely insane. I'd rather have a weak, stupid, confused, senile president like Biden, whom Israelis are much less likely to listen to than a strong president who could convince Israelis to do something suicidal. Much more dangerous. Six, finally, do you think the U.S. should send troops to Ukraine? Please comment. No, I don't think the U.S. should send troops to Ukraine. And, in the war between Russia and Ukraine, I wish both sides well, because they're both Jew killers and enemies of the Jewish people. I wish them both well. I hope that they both have I hope they both do have a war, and I hope it's a big one. Thank you, Harel. And now we go to someone who asked very, very good questions, and we're very happy to have him on the forum, Judah Katz, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, your opinion on the following Orthodox rabbis who have YouTube channels and live in America, Rabbi Manis Friedman and Rabbi Yosef Mizrahi. Well, I can only answer 50% of your question, because I honestly don't know. I never watched any of Rabbi Manis Friedman's videos, so I'm completely ignorant about it, so I can't answer that question. I'm not happy about any Jew living in America, but especially not a rabbi. But I've never watched his videos, so I can't comment on them. I don't know. He may be very good. He may be very bad. I have no idea. As far as Rabbi Yosef Mizrahi, I don't agree with him about living in America. I disagree with him. I am a little biased because he's a personal friend of mine, and because he did help me. He tried to help me with the Aliyah, with my Aliyah. He's a Haredi rabbi, and I disagree with him on the Haredi issues, but he's a Haredi rabbi, and he intervened on my behalf with Israeli leaders to try to get them to allow me into Israel. They ignored him, just like they've ignored Knesset members and others who intervened on my behalf. The chief rabbi of Israel intervened on my behalf, and still they won't let me in. But he did try to help me. He sincerely tried to help me, and he is a friend of mine, so I'm a little biased when it comes to him. Because he tried to do good for me, even though I disagree with some of the things that he said, some of the statements he's made I've disagreed with, but you know, he certainly was good to me personally. And I hope I'm not committing a sin by allowing the fact that he tried to help me get into Israel to influence me in any way. You know, I hope not, because again, where I disagree with him, I disagree with him, but I still think it takes some courage to write to people in Israel, because he has a home in Israel. He's an Israeli citizen, he has a home in Israel, and intervened for me, and I am a controversial person, and he still took a stand and intervened for me. So, I don't know. I hold that in his favor. Thank you, Judah Katz. And now we go to another good friend of ours, Angry Chinese Kahanist, who's been a good friend of ours for many years. And he writes, do you have any family in Israel? Tell us about them. I do have family in Israel. I don't want to go into specific detail because I don't want them to get fired from their jobs. Being associated with me, who knows? These leftist companies. I don't know. The big companies in Israel are run by leftist elitists. I don't know. It's like America. It's all politically correct. So, you know, I don't want to say specifically. I don't want them to lose their jobs. But I do have family in Israel. Most of my family lives in Israel. And They are good Jews, and they're Jews who support the right causes, if you know what I mean. They support the Hilltop Youth, and they support the good people. And yes, I have family in Israel, and I'm very, you know, and I am in touch with them, of course. Angry Chinese Khanist now writes, and I quote, Rabbi M. Kahana often spoke about the Arab problem in Israel. Why do you say Muslim problem? You have a point there. You have a good point there, because the Arab problem is not just Arab Muslims. I say Muslim because about 95% of the Arabs in Israel are Muslim. Maybe 95%, something like that. So, you know, in a situation like that, it's primarily an Islamic issue with Islam playing a huge role in creating this type of hatred that they have toward the Jews and toward all non-Muslims. But you're right. Rabbi Kahana did not limit it to the Muslims, because he knew that non-Muslim Arabs also have a long history of murdering Jews and of being against Jews and of trying to prove their loyalty to the Arab nation, even though they're not Muslims. So, and being Arab nationalists, they're not Muslims, but they're Arab nationalists. And Arab nationalism means destroying Israel. That's the definition of Arab nationalism for 150 years now. So, yes, Rabbi Kahana did speak about that, and he probably, his definition is, and what he spoke about is probably better than mine. But Rabbi Kahana was better than me in every way. I mean, Rabbi Kahana, I'm not 1,000th of what Rabbi Kahana was. But you make a good point, Angry Chinese Kahanist. The only reason I mention again Muslim problem, and I'll probably mention it again in the future, is because I do think Islam plays a major role in the vast majority of cases of where we see Arabs attacking Jews. Thank you, Angry Chinese Kahanist. And we now go to Am Rafael, who always asks great questions, and Am Rafael writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I studied Pythagoras, the founder of Greek philosophy, and it seems he took a lot of his teachings from Kabbalah when he traveled to Israel, such as reincarnation, round earth, planets moving despite Greeks believing planets were stationary and the universe being created with order. Can you talk about Kabbalah? Also, what do you think about American YouTube rabbis? Okay, let's start with Kabbalah. Kabbalah, there are three basic divisions in Judaism. And I know there are other rabbis and other Jewish people who speak about this, have a different way of dividing, but this is the way I see it. You have what's called the Oral Torah and the Written Torah, and you have the Kabbalah. The written Torah, because it's written, is about our history and our past and the commandments and what we're supposed to learn from the past. Now, it's all relevant. The written Torah are the first five books of the Bible, and it's all relevant. It's all relevant in every generation. It's very relevant. We should read it and study it because it affects what we do in every generation. But it's basically talking about events that occurred in the past. And of course, there's prophecy in the future. There is prophecy in the future. But still, it's writing about prophecy that was given years ago. That's the written Torah. The oral Torah is the Torah that we see in the Mishnah, the Talmud, Chazal. And the oral Torah was also given to the Jewish people. Or the laws and the rules and what we see in oral Torah were given to the Jewish people also at Mount Sinai during the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Moses. But that, the oral Torah is the present. Why is it the present? Because oral, what does it mean oral? We're speaking, we're influencing, and rabbis are making decisions and changes, and there are changes. Electricity was discovered, so you have to make a ruling on that. That wasn't around during the time of the written Torah. You got to make a ruling on various other issues that come up and changes that come up in the world all the time. It's based upon the laws of the written Torah, but the oral Torah is a dynamic, constant example of something that remain that where you have constant discussion and constant analysis, and that's the present. So the past is the written Torah, even though that past is very relevant to us and to our future. And the oral Torah is the present. The Kabbalah is the future. Kabbalah is our predictions of what will come in the future. And very complicated. very complicated predictions of what will come in the future. If you just want to know in general what to expect in the future, you go to the Hebrew prophets in the Bible and you'll see, and they'll tell you in general. But if you want specifics and a deeper understanding, that's Kabbalah. And that is something that you cannot understand unless you're a Torah scholar. Because I'm not a Torah scholar, because I'm just a simple Jew, I don't understand Kabbalah. It's beyond me. It's way above me. And I do not recommend that anyone study it unless they are a bona fide Torah scholar. Unless they have gone through all of Torah and understand Torah and are really on a high level of Torah knowledge, they should not study Kabbalah, in my opinion. Because I think it's too complicated and too difficult. And you know, the nonsense, we have Kabbalah classes for Madonna. How do you say her name again? What's the name of that disgusting prostitute who sings all the time? Madonna. You see, by the way, what happens to me when I don't know if my fever is kicking in or what's happening. But Madonna and these others, they have places where they go to where these cult type organizations claim to teach Kabbalah, and they tell you you can study Kabbalah even if you don't know anything about Judaism or anything, and you don't keep any of the commandments. It's not necessary to keep the commandments. You just study Kabbalah. It doesn't matter. That's baloney. Those are heretical cults. There's no truth to them. The only people that should be studying Kabbalah are bona fide Torah scholars. No one else should be studying it. It's way above my level of understanding. And so I wouldn't even touch it because I'm not knowledgeable enough. Thank you. I'm Raphael. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. I always enjoy speaking to our great JTFers. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.